So would you do something foolish? Okay, then I'm done here. Would you do something silly if you thought it might make a difference? Something that other people don't understand, might think is strange, like bringing bagels over to thank God. Do you think you would do that if you thought it might bring more healing to the world?
Yes.
Excellent. My work here is done. So, how many of you grew up singing Over the River and Through the Woods? Oh, I love seeing all these hands. This is wonderful. So more than half of us, I grew up singing this song. We would sing it in car rides to my grandparents' farm. Sometimes it was only an hour's drive, and sometimes it was a drive from Southern California up back to Oregon. Long car rides. We didn't have those devices, right? We had singing to keep us company, or also like, oh, there's a letter that begins with A, and there's a letter that begins with B. So I had no idea that that song would follow me into adulthood and has followed you into adulthood, but I want to tell you about it. So when we took those long car rides and going to my grandparents' farm, we were doing it because we were heading there usually for Thanksgiving or for Christmas, which meant a big feast. And I grew up in a really big extended family, so always we were going to see aunts and uncles and cousins there. And the favorite thing for me and for my older brother, the very best favorite thing at these things were we would steal the black olives and put one on each fingertip. Now, my fingers were smaller then. I had to get the jumbo olives last night at the Stop and Shop. Right? And I know it's not going to fit on them. We would run around, right, with our fingers like this, me, my brother, and my older cousin, and then eat them up. There were never enough olives. I believe there will be enough or some olives at coffee hour, in case anybody's inspired. Actually, you know, I wrote this, and last night I was talking to my 20-year-old, to Mariah, and I said, okay, and she had no idea what I was going to be preaching about. I said, what was my favorite thing at Thanksgiving? Do you remember? And she's like, olives, and your brother, but we don't like doing it. You didn't pass it on to us. So from Thanksgiving and singing this song, the composer of this song is Lydia Mariah Child, right? If you look there, it looks like it's Maria, but it's pronounced with an H at the end. And she was a Unitarian. So this is one of her most, this is probably the most visible legacy, the one that's widely known outside of Unitarian circles. But she, in her lifetime, was one of the most famous women in America. At the age of 22, she wrote the first American historical novel. It's called Habermas, and it was about a very taboo subject. So it was a controversial book. She wrote about an interracial marriage between a white woman and a Native American man. Then, in 1829, she wrote her most popular book, The Frugal Housewife, subtitled, dedicated to those who are not ashamed of economy. In 25 years, it had 33 printings. So she became a relatively well-off author based on this, the selling of The Frugal Housewife. And she, along with her husband, David Child, wanted to live their values out loud. They were very involved in progressive causes of their day. And David, even though Lydia Mariah Child, and she'd like to go by Mariah, even though Mariah had a lot of professional success, David didn't. He had wild, impractical ideas that he tried to make happen, and not so much. So, but together, they were quite a pair, and they wanted to do something more than just talk out against racism, against slavery, with their people who shared that same point of view, or argue about slavery with people who didn't share their point of view, or keep just writing. They wanted to do something more. So they moved away from the Boston suburbs, and they moved to Northampton, Massachusetts, which is where I just moved from. And this is why I know this story. They decided that they were going to undermine the southern economy that was based on sugarcane. They were going to grow sugar beets. Don't you remember that chapter from your American history where King Cain was killed and slavery was brought to its knees because of the sugar beet industry? No, right? Rose is like, that didn't happen. So they had this grand idea, but it didn't work. It was a failure. And I thought at first maybe it was because they were trying to grow sugar beets in Northampton, Massachusetts. But I actually read up on the process for making sugar beets into sugar. It is so, so complicated and complex. There's no way that a single family can create a whole industry around this. So they experienced failure, but they did not stop. And I want to make sure I tell you a little bit about the other things that Mariah did. But I don't want to turn this into a lecture. It's still a sermon, right? But I do want to tell you, she wrote the most influential nonfiction anti-slavery tract of its time. So the most influential one of fiction is Uncle Tom's Cabin. So around the same time, she wrote the most influential nonfiction tract. An appeal on behalf of that class of Americans called Africans. And that brought her closed doors to publishing. She had also written some children's stories, No More Writing for Children for You. Right? She maintained a correspondence with John Brown as he sat on the gallows before he was hung for treason. She had a very active advocacy program on behalf of Native Americans and actually contributed to a policy program under the Ulysses S. Grant administration to try and be fair to Native Americans. Didn't work out so well either. She wrote a treatise on gender equality. She was quite a woman. So when I think to the story of Benny, thanking God, thanking the cosmos, and finding a way that his heart, that made sense to his heart, but maybe didn't make sense to others, I think of it as unconventional, as not going the straight line of going and praying at the right time, at the right place, with the right words. And it was a surprise to Benny's grandpa and to probably Benny's rabbi. So I want to share with you this quote from the contemporary social philosopher Rebecca Solnit. Causes and effects assume that history marches forward, but history is not an army. It is a crab scuttling this way and scuttling that. It's a drip of soft water wearing away stone. It's an earthquake breaking centuries of tension. Sometimes one person inspires a movement, or her words do decades later. Sometimes a few passionate people change the world. Sometimes they start a mass movement and millions do. Sometimes those millions are stirred all at the same time by the same outrage, the same ideal, and change comes upon us like a change of weather. All that these transformations have in common is that they begin in the imagination, that they begin in hope. So when I look at what Lydia Mariah Child gifted us, the biggest but largely invisible influence is our appreciation of wisdom coming from all of the world's faith traditions. In 1855, she wrote a 3-volume collection looking at different faith traditions and raising up the wisdom in each one, placing them on the same level as each other. And this was, to say the least, heretical. called by our Theodore Parker, he called this the book of the age. It had that kind of influence. And when I think of that, and I think of today, I think of how we gather, I think of our seventh grade curriculum of neighboring faiths, and I see a straight line there. So I'm thankful for Lydia Mariah Child and her legacy, whether we can see it or not. And I want us to raise her up. I want us to sing her song anew, knowing that she is a part of our heritage, knowing that we can be a part of her future, and knowing that we too might take wild, impractical ideas, some of which will fail, and some of which may fail and succeed later, and some which will succeed at the time. If we truly believe that we are made for times such as these, and I do believe we are, I wonder what wild and loving and impractical possibilities await.